This is Previously in Europe, a podcast about what's previously in Europe. I'm one of your co-hosts, Hugh, in London. I'm your lovely co-host, Kieran, in Berlin. Say hello, Kieran.
It's me, Berlin Kieran, here to talk about money.
That is right. This week, as part of our recurring segment, Pie in the Sky, we are discussing the EU recovery funds as proposed by the EU Parliament and not the knockoff plan published by Angela Merkel and her pal Papa Macron, which is worse. And we're going to discuss in what ways it's worse. And then more broadly, is the Parliament's plan just kind of a, oh, that would be great, but we know it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I guess. Do they know it's not going to happen? I suspect they also kind of know it's not going to happen.
Yeah, but you know, let's dream big.
Okay.
Yeah. So, basically, this is a to get people caught up. This is the back and forth over. So the leader of the parliament kind of put this as, this isn't the kind of emergency like rescue money to deal with the crisis itself, or to kind of like buy ventilators or like PPE or whatever. It's the recovery fund. So effectively now the planning is starting for at a international level, kind of the EU level, what can we do to like force the recovery into gear once places start reopening. And kind of people differ quite a lot on this. And there was a lot of, we discussed it in a previous episode, there was a lot of pushback from any, from kind of the four quote-unquote frugal countries, which is Austria, the Netherlands, Finland, and I forget the other one.
Germany?
Yeah, sure. basically, there was, yeah, but pushback to the extent of having any debt on an EU level is just not going to happen. And realistically, it's not the time to just increase the EU's budget in terms of amount paid in by national governments.
So Sweden.
The other one. Yeah, it's I knew it was in Germany. Germany are their own brand of frugalness. Effectively, things have changed since then to the point where initially the countries signing on for the idea of having some sort of EU-wide bonds being issued, like Corona bonds is what they were kind of being called in the media at the time. And while this got a lot of derision from the Dutch, it was quite notable that the French were on board, which, you know, seemed quite unusual in terms of maybe them actually realizing the grandiose nature of the problem, and that it did need some sort of cohesion, because there are economies that are more well placed to raise debt and pay their way into recovery than say a lot of the southern economies, or the ones that were already badly hit and still recovering from only recently getting out of their bailouts from the financial crash, literally like Greece and Italy. And to a lesser extent, like, you know, Spain would probably have more trouble buying their way out than France would, or than Germany would, or than Sweden would, for instance. And so this week, the EU Parliament voted through their proposal, which is a 2 trillion euro package. And then the core argument that they put forward is that, to be making it very clear, this would be tied to the multi-annual financial framework, the MFF, which is basically what the EU Commission have said, and the Council have said that they probably want to do if they want to do any funding on an EU level, is to tie it all into the actual funding model, as opposed to having a completely separate thing. So they want to tie to that, but then they are very clear that they want it to be in surplus to the otherwise planned MFF, as opposed to becoming part of it. So they don't want the EU to become the Corona recovery funding vehicle via the money they're already going to spend, because then they can't do any of their existing projects.
Yeah.
And effectively, they think 2 trillion euro would be a reasonable size for this. There's also like a notable clause in it. So Point 17 in the adopted text says, we recall the need to preserve the credibility of our union and warns the commission against the use of financial wizardry and dubious multipliers to advertise ambitious figures. Warns of the headline figures of investment to be mobilized do not constitute and cannot be presented as the genuine size of the Recovery and Transformation Fund. Effectively saying that you can't say this is a public-private partnership and the total amount of money that is being spent on this, even though the EU itself is and member states are not spending this much money, this is the amount of money there is, or you know, messing around with figures in any way like that, that would be deemed wizardry and not allowed.
I like the specific ban on magic. It's very it's very medieval Europe. I like it. The thing that I think to put into context as well of this, like the 2 trillion figure, is I believe von der Leyen was kind of like approached, or like finance ministers, when they originally were discussing the corona bonds. Like I think we talked about it before on the podcast that, like, you know, people like Wupke Hoekstra like basically rage quitting a Skype meeting and stuff like that. I think when that was originally proposed, the economy's backing the idea of corona bonds, which includes France, we're talking about a figure of like 1.5 trillion.
Yeah, I remember
that. Yeah. So 2 trillion is ahead of that, but 1.5 is also ahead of what is probably being seriously talked about by others at the moment.
Yeah. There's one other point, which is clause 15, which urges the package to be distributed through loans and mostly through grants. The mostly through grants is very important, because the other concern of this was basically you could envisage something where the EU can raise bonds on the bond market where it's backed by all of the member states, so they'd be like, you know, very, very secure bonds from, you know, other countries' views, and then loan that money out to member states. So basically it would be a mechanism by which member states could raise money, but it would still be a loan that they would have to pay back to their national budget at some point. They would just be this middleman EU doing it for them, which would be, you know, wouldn't necessarily solve the problem. It would lower the problem, because you wouldn't have the trouble of countries becoming like effectively insolvent, where they can't raise debts with any reasonable interest rate. But you would have the problem where then you would just have a load of countries that owe Germany money via the EU, which is not what anyone actually wants. So basically, two grants, by meaning which it doesn't need to be repaid. It's the same as if the EU decides to fund an infrastructure project via one of the structural funds. It's like it's a grant to the body building that infrastructure. It's not a loan that you have to pay back. And then direct payments and investment and equity. And for the fund to be managed directly by the commission. This is also quite important, where like the executive of the EU would be in charge of all of the money, and they would be able to dole out grants as they see fit. There wouldn't be any amount over this amount needs to be approved by the council, in which case you just have the Netherlands would just start vetoing stuff constantly.
Yeah.
So yeah, again, that's pretty reasonable, and they intersect themselves as well, saying that it should be effectively like put into the EU budget as it exists currently, and just add things to the EU budget, and therefore the parliament would have full oversight and participation in deciding what does and doesn't get money, which I mean is reasonably a way of democratizing it and kind of ensuring that the parliament themselves get a lot more power over this. I guess the main caveat of why we wanted to discuss this is because, to a certain extent, this doesn't matter. Well, that sounds quite good. And like, this was voted through. There were 505 votes for this resolution and 119 votes against. All of the parties except for the IDG, which are the far right nationalist parties, voted for it. With like rebels from each camp, there were a few like the percentage-wise, the GUE, NGL, so the kind of further left parties. There were more abstentions and against votes, like proportionally. There were also a lot of against votes from Renew Europe for some reason, formerly known as ALDE. I'm not really sure why they voted against. This seems like their kind of thing, unless they just like national. So like all the FDP people in Germany voted against it, which I don't understand.
Well, they're we've talked about how like ALDE or FTP or not FTP but ALDE Renew is kind of like a weird beast, and FTP have always been like very market fundamentalists. I talked about it on my other podcast, Cornish Beatty, but they're sometimes more comparable to like US libertarians at times than they are with like, you know, Nick Clegg's Lib Dem party. So kind of they're always they're a strange beast.
They are a strange beast. It's strange when something that's like for raising more money is voted like predominantly for by CDU politicians with a couple of exceptions. But then predominantly against by what are supposed to be like the centrist party. it's very strange. Anyway, but basically this was like voted for by like an enormous majority of effectively everyone in the parliament other than the far-right nationalists kind of agree this is probably a good idea. This would generally be like a good approach, even though it's not heavy on like specifics, but it's kind of a resolution as opposed to a itemized plan. But I guess the main principles of it, which is injecting it as it's additional funding to the EU, and the EU could raise the money via debt that's backed by all the countries, and then kind of being very clear that this isn't like a special case, where for that this is something that would the EU be better at running than the national government, so you should just let the EU run it. As I said, in effect does not matter, because the parliament can't propose like a plan that will then go into effect immediately. The commission or the council has to propose a plan. Next week the commission is going to propose their plan.
So actually about that, because I had read earlier that they had like a May 27th deadline of their official blueprint, von der Leyen's plan. So that is true, and as far as I know that's still the case. Of when like the full, I think they're calling it blueprint to recovery or something like that, which I don't know, that's lame. But no one wants to stare at blueprints. Anyway, the EU Commission, though, originally stated when they were like just talking about recovery plans in general that they would figure that the plan would be equal to or higher than 1 trillion euro. And on Tuesday, 19th of May, like 24 hours after the Macron plan came out, they kind of reaffirmed, no, we're still thinking 1 trillion. Let's see, the exact quote is, our ambition is not to increase the financing capacity in the range of hundreds of billions, but rather by a figure exceeding a trillion euros, Commissioner Vice President Vladas Dombrovskis said after a meeting with finance ministers.
So I guess the parliament is angling itself in it, like positioning itself kind of, I guess, like from a very simplistic point of view, to the left of the commission, which are effectively like, the bailout needs to be larger, like we want it to be, we think 2 trillion would be a great number, we heard you saying greater than 1 billion or 1 trillion, we think that should be a 2. And so like as you were saying, on,
do you know what's greater than 1 trillion? 2 trillion.
Pretty much. So on Monday, on the 18th, there's a headline I really liked about this that actually I think does sum this up, which is Berlin buckles on bonds in 500 billion Franco-German recovery plan. So this is like Merkel and Macron have come out with what they think a reasonable proposal would be, and it shares a lot of the same kind of tenets of the what the parliament are asking for, which is that it would be money raised that will be controlled by the EU. Effectively, it's fully financed debt issued by the EU itself and backed by the members, which is a big shift from where like Germany was before, which was somewhat on the fence, somewhat against, with a lot of the CDU. So Merkel's party kind of been vocally against euro bonds or corona bonds or whatever you wanted to call it. And then France being for it, and this effectively is Merkel coming out with a I'm for bonds and I'd like 500 billion, which is a lot less than 2 trillion, but it's it shares a lot of the same core ideas, which is EU level money that the EU will be in charge of, that will be in surplus to the other EU budget that was otherwise being planned. Which, to be clear, like the parliamentary majority was for preserving the EU budget. So prior to coronavirus, the parliament was pro keeping the budget at the same level it was at, even after the UK leaves. So effectively being like saying that all the member states should come together and give more money in some sort of like distributed way to make up for the shortfall from the UK, not for the EU to absorb that shortfall. And this effectively be on top of that, we'd also like 2 trillion euros, which sounds great. That sounds like the way to do it. But this seems to be like a much more hedged version of that. I suspect the commission is going to come out with something in the middle of these two, which I don't know. It's the I guess the parliament is trying to position itself as, we want to reserve the right to vote down whatever proposal comes to us as not good enough, and we're staking that this is what our level, we think our starting negotiating position would be.
Before I read the like commission committing to like 1 trillion or like making very obvious like signals that it's going to be 1 trillion from them, it did. The announcement from the parliament did seem more like just kind of like a posturing and possibly a means of garnering goodwill. Like they had to know that like what they were asking for here was not in their power to like grant themselves. Something I kind of disagree with in general, I think. Yeah. Anyway, but the they must have known that that was the case, and then that led me to believe, okay, you're only doing this to seem like, you know, relative heroes in this crisis situation without having to, you know, do anything. Like, talk is cheap, etc.
Yeah, right.
But then, like, when I saw the commission thing, I was like, okay, this seems more like almost a coordinated strategy at this point of, like, or somewhat coordinated strategy of, like, the parliament is acting as the I can't remember what the term is in union organizing, but you do have like, there's a term in union organizing or union negotiations with like labor and management, between labor and management, where you have like someone representing the union in the room who is basically there to look insane and threatening, so that the person you're actually negotiating with doesn't seem as unreasonable.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember what the term is in negotiations for that, but it's the hope, it's the opening gambit, it's your highball kind of thing of just like, we want 2 trillion, well that's ridiculous, well okay 1 trillion then, kind of thing. I think there's also one piece of information as well that we haven't kind of landed on yet, and I didn't bring it up before the podcast because I basically just saw the push notification on my phone. Not gonna lie. But I have it here in front of me that I think also kind of colors this as well. So we have Dr. Andrea Ammann, who is kind of like the EU go-to person on coronavirus. I'm not entirely sure. Oh no, she's from the ECDC, the European Center for Disease Prevention, or disease prevention and control. I don't know why the P doesn't make it into the anagram. Anyway, so she's from the ECDC. Well, that's just easier to say, I guess. Anyway. Her whole thing now is like she advises the governments. The ECDC has like basically no power, but her now official line is Europe needs to prepare for the second wave. There is going to be a second wave. which, you know, we've heard this from a lot of other, like, you know, people. Beforehand, like, in different countries, in China and the States and in, like, Japan, whatever, the idea of the second wave has been talked about, has been slowly leaking out into the public consciousness for a while, of like, this is the thing that happens. And it was very early on being like, oh, this, you know, it's a flu like disease, so when flu season comes around again, there's a real chance. But that was what I remember hearing, like, very early on. So I guess this question, like, this, with that piece of information in mind, is the recovery plan being proposed now, especially these, like, low-balling figures of, like, 500 billion. I was like, okay, cool. Yeah, maybe 500 billion might do us over for now, but there will be a second wave.
Yeah.
Do we get another 500 billion then? Because that's 1 trillion. That's kind of closer to what the commission wants. And, like, even then, are even the figures of 2 trillion, 1 trillion, is that compensating for a second wave? Do they think it would handle a second wave, basically? Like, are anyone, I don't know if this has been considered, basically, but
I, like, think it's, I probably, so it has a couple, there's a couple of, like, aspects to it, which is something that the like the parliament does want, and have kind of mentioned on a number of occasions, is that they want there to be, as part of the next MFF, to be EU level health spending that's kind of on a scale that's more in line with other big line items in the budget, as opposed to as it exists now, which is effectively, like, there's the EU, I forget what it's called, their version of the Centers for Disease Control, that is kind of like a 100 person office somewhere in Brussels.
ECDC.
Yeah. Nice.
It's very easy to say.
which is kind of basically their point, is that there isn't, like, a coordinated EU level health spending apparatus, and there should be, and part of that will be the like the stockpiling, etc. But I think this is kind of separate to, like, discussion of whether there is or isn't a second wave. It's the because this isn't going to be used for, like, national levels, this would basically be money that the EU would be able to dole out, and it wouldn't be kind of the equivalent for on a national level, where you're talking about, oh, part of our coronavirus recovery will be things like letting people go, wage replacement money, etc., better benefits for people looking for jobs, or, like, small business loans and stuff. This would be kind of more grander EU level stuff, where you can fund larger projects and infrastructure and things of that nature. As opposed to kind of, like, the thing about if there's a second wave, the predominant hit of that would be, well, are we prepared for it, and the way we were in the, like, better prepared for it than we were before. The economic hit, I would argue, wouldn't necessarily be something that you can, like, absorb at an EU level. Like, you can continue to increase spending, but at a certain point, you start thinking of, well, what do you want to spend the money on. I don't think there's not enough specifics in this plan to, like, address that. If they had said, we want 4 trillion euros, because there's no specifics. They just want the EU budget to be bigger so they can decide what to spend it on later. And similarly with 500 billion, I would agree that 500 billion is unlikely to be a lot of money, but I guess the thing to keep in mind is this is supposed to be as well as a local government having their own programs, because the EU doesn't have that much power to kind of enact like national level policies in the same way. But, you know, this is kind of where we are. I think it's notable that this, I would view this would give a lot more power to the if it's done in the way that the parliament is asking for, regardless of the number, this would give a lot more power to the parliament. Which I think is quite, I think if we were discussing this last year, would have been like a pie in the sky idea that we would both agree would be unlikely to happen anytime soon.
Yeah.
But if you increased their budget by 500 billion euros, that's already a little bit more power. If you increase their budget by 1 trillion euros, that is quite a bit more power. That's a lot of spending power. I wouldn't necessarily move big decision making to the parliament, but it would be letting them have like a up or down say and amendment powers for a lot more money.
It would make their job matter more, which is also kind of good, I guess, because we do vote for them. They do exist. They should probably do something while they exist.
Yeah. So that'd like this, nice. this would be, you know, an enormous increase. Like 500, even 500 billion would be, is an enormous percentage increase on the EU's budget. If it's, I'm assuming it's not, I'm assuming the 500 billion is not per year, but if it were per year, that would be like a fivefold, almost like be a fourfold increase on the EU budget.
Hmm.
Like the EU budget isn't that big. This is the thing.
What is the EU budget?
The EU budget for 2019 was 165 billion euros.
Jesus Christ.
But again, this is the thing. People got a view like, oh, the EU is like a like massive boondoggle, and you're like, yeah, well, it's, like, I mean, they get quite a bit done with the amount of money they have. Actually, they're in charge of running a lot of stuff to a certain extent. And running the policy for a lot of things. So that basically like a trillion euros would be kind of more of the like the entire length of the like a 5-year funding period. Whereas which is about 1% of the total EU's gross national income over that period. Whereas the parliament effectively is asking, we would like you to triple our budget. Which I mean, like, I think is a great idea. That's, I mean, like, the EU has a lot of problems, but the and I'm not super happy with the composition of the EU parliament now, but Sassoli's in charge. Give him 2 billion euros or 2 trillion euros. I'm for that. I think he'd spend it on some not terrible things. That would be a better use of money than you know, this is if Austria had to give 3% of their budget, I think they'd spend it better in the EU than Austria would.
A bullet train from Brussels to Sassoli's house in Italy.
Italy could use the infrastructure.
Sure, I mean, it depends on how far south the Sassoli's house is, because otherwise it's just kind of get your money's worth.
Where is... He's from Florence. Yeah, that's not great.
No, it's a little bit far. It could be further north, it could be further south, I guess. It could be a lot further south.
It could be a lot further south. But anyway, I think that's the... This is the caveat to this is... They still need to get this passed, like Kurtz, Rutte, Swedish lady, whose name I've forgotten.
The head of Sweden.
Yeah,
the PM. The PM of Sweden is a man.
What? Wait. Oh yes, yes it is. My bad. Wait.
Yes.
What am I confused with?
Stefan Löfven. You're possibly thinking of. The current leader of Denmark? Yeah, current leader of Denmark.
I'm confusing Denmark and Sweden. My bad.
Yeah.
That was very silly of me. I apologize.
So they
still have to get past those people, and they're they might view 500 billion as a ridiculous starting figure.
Yeah. Mette Frederiksen.
Yes, that's Frederiksen.
So in general, your resistance are going to be probably like the FANGs. People that were mentioned before of like Finland, Austria, Netherlands, Germany, but that's within the Eurozone. Outside of the Eurozone, you basically have your two groups outside of the Eurozone, which is Eastern Europe and like Nordic economies that are not on the Euro. And the Nordic economies not on the Euro because of their general richness are against the idea of any kind of like mutual debt.
Yeah.
Whereas I believe Eastern Europe kind of views it, even if they're not in the Euro, as being like, this would probably benefit us. So they're probably... Yeah, so your opposition is going to be like the FANGs. In short, the rich countries. That's going to be here. Yeah, that's going to be your opposition.
It's going to be like a small number of the rich company countries.
Wouldn't?
Yeah. But Merkel coming out for this is a big shift, and you know, the parliament voting for this in such a like a wide obviously, like, they will obviously vote to give themselves more spending power, but with the caveats of they seem to have genuinely recognized the pitfalls of the 2008 or 2009 bailout funds and the problems that caused, and the kind of structural design problems they had, and generally the like structural problems around like the European Green Deal that von der Leyen put forward. Like, one of the criticisms of that is the headline number of total funding in theory for it is actually nowhere near the actual number they're talking about. So I guess, like, pointing that out specifically in their resolution, saying, like, well, this is what we are considering when we're voting for this. It's the headline number, who actually has control over the money, and then whether or not you're actively lying to us, which I mean, I've been critical previously of, like, you know, von der Leyen becoming Commission President in the first place and that being a massive fuck up by the S&D, kind of giving up the commissioner position for the Parliament. But, you know, to an extent, they are kind of coming, they're steering the Parliament in kind of like a reasonable consensus position. I think this seems to me like a very, I don't know, reasonable position to take. Words are hard. Synonyms.
Yeah. I guess we'll see how this shakes up, because I think we're like in early days of even these negotiations. But you're right that, like, Merkel is a big get for anyone who's a believer in like a European mutual debt instrument. I'm curious as to whether she could actually influence anyone, because I feel like the other members of, like, FANGs in particular are probably not people who would bow to German influence so easily. Maybe Kurz, maybe Finland.
Yeah, I think the thing about the, like, the quote-unquote FANGs are that they're all, you know, without kind of them placing themselves as the, you know, saying that it's unfair because we'd have like a higher burden in any mutual debt, and then but if Germany come out specifically for it at like a not tiny number, then suddenly you're like, well, I mean, it starts to become a less and less cohesive arguing position where, like, Rutte can't be like, the Dutch aren't going to pay for the recovery, and then Merkel is like, hello, Germany is a much bigger economy, our budget is much higher, we stand to gain a lot less from this mutual debt than even you would. So,
yeah,
you know, it's while domestically it might still continue to be popular with, like, Rutte's base, it starts to hold less and less weight.
Yeah, for sure. I really like the idea of just, like, Merkel being like, oh no, what about your domestic auto industry, the Dutch auto industry? How will they ever shut up? Shut up.
No one will ship anything through Rotterdam if they can't afford to buy it.
Think of the hit on the lying about where IKEA sales happened industry of the Netherlands.
Yeah. Like, does Russia want there to be no IKEA sales? That seems to be what he wants.
Oh, dear. Yeah, and the strong Finnish industry of Angry Birds. I don't know. I can just rag on all the European economies as much as I want. It's great.
Everyone has their niche that is laughable.
We all deindustrialize and now we don't make anything.
Yeah. I think this is, genuinely, this seems... having talked about this a few times over the last few weeks, there's definitely, like, a tipping of the scales kind of thing happening. Where first it was a bit unusual that Macron was signing on to any talk of mutual, like, very high levels of mutual debt. The Parliament supporting it isn't surprising, but the Parliament supporting it at these kind of levels with such
most
a larger
ECR number being involved, and
that's actually a very good point. Like, the ECR, the conservatives and reformists voting for this as part of the majority is like an admission that this needs to happen, which again, they're like, this is like the that I think that clip of like the Dutch finance minister kind of like laughing down any example, like any talk about this to reporters, was that rooted in it?
No, I think it was Whipscott.
Yeah, like him basically laughing at the idea and then turning around and realizing that like large majority consensus even from the conservatives who otherwise would be his allies is that no, this needs to happen. We need to spend a lot of money at the EU level to put together like an actual recovery fund. Seems like a enormous shift, and now Merkel signing on to what is a much worse but definitely existent version of this is a surprising shift.
Oh, it is indeed. And with that, that has been another episode of Previously in Europe, a show that is produced and created by Hugh O'Brien and Kieran Doles, those lovely voices you just heard, and continue to hear because I'm still talking. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. That really helps a lot. A 4 or 5 star review with some text telling us how nice we are, that is also greatly appreciated. You can tell a friend. If you have anyone in your life that you know personally who you think might like the podcast, tell them about it. It's, you know, word of mouth is still the best way you can promote these things. Lastly, if there's a way you want to more materially support us, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/previouslyineurope. There you can give a donation, and if it's above $3 per month, you get your name read out on the podcast like these cool cats: Dermot Burke, Cheers Arian, Echo2100, Justin Paul Sammons, Michael Hall, Newt Alexander, Niall McLaughlin, Patrick Seba, Petra V, Smyrow, Subliminal Kid, and Svenvest. And if you want to find out what we're up to, you know, you can subscribe to the podcast. That's probably the best way to do it. But we're on Twitter at Prev in Europe, P-R-E-V in Europe. And we also have links to other things. Best way to find all of that is to go to previouslyineurope.eu. Thanks for listening.